Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 251 here at the Bible Department. We are diving into Malachi chapters 3 and 4 today. So we're ending the book of Malachi, waving bye-bye to Malachi. So sad to see you leave, my good sir. Like every day, I'm going to give you some context clues so that you can understand the context of what we are discussing. And then I'm going to give you some nerdy nuggets. We all love nerdy nuggets. And then I'm going to give you a timeless truth, maybe a couple timeless truths. Malachi lends itself towards a lot of timeless truths, but we're wrapping up the book today. Really, really good stuff ahead. If you haven't done the reading, if you have not read Malachi chapter 3 and Malachi chapter 4, how about you stop the video, pause the audio, go read today's assigned reading and come on back, all right? You're not going to miss much. I'll be right here when you get back, all right? We don't want this podcast to be a substitute for you reading God's word. We actually want it to be a supplement to reading God's word. All right, the context for today is no different than the context from yesterday. So I'm going to give a short overview of the context. If you want a full breakdown, go to yesterday's video, which was day 250, Malachi chapter 1 and 2. The context would be disappointed, cynical people, okay? This is 100 years since the people have come back from exile, okay? So the temple's rebuilt, the people are occupying their homeland once again, and they are walking in the partial fulfillment of the prophetic promises of the past, but not the full fulfillment of the prophetic promises of the past, okay? So their disappointment, the temple is built, but God's glory hasn't entered into that temple. God's spirit hasn't been poured out. There's no Davidic king on the throne. And the Messiah has not come back. Okay. And there's no covenant renewal. So there's five big reasons why they're just kind of disappointed. They've got partial fulfillment of the prophecies, but not full fulfillment. And here's a timeless truth for us. Okay. This is the last book of the prophets. Okay. It's the final book of the prophets. Right after this, we're going to get a long waiting period and then the very fulfillment of the things that they were believing God for would arrive. They're like 400 years away. Can you believe that? They're closer than they've ever been, right? Like they're close. The people of God are closer than they've ever been, but the most cynical and most disappointed than they've ever been. And I think that a lot of times the enemy likes to attack us with disappointment and cynicism when we're closer than we've ever been. And I want to encourage you, don't get weary in well-doing. Maybe like the people of Israel, you feel entitled to the full measure of God's promise over your life, but you are experiencing a partial fulfillment of God's promises over your life. Well, please, opposition. The enemy loves to bring opposition when you're closest to the goal, when you're closest to the finish line. And so don't give in, okay? Don't give in to the enemy's temptation. Stay full of faith. Fight cynicism. Fight disappointment. Because the promise could be just around the corner and you don't want to disqualify yourself, okay? So the context is that the people disappointed with this partial fulfillment of these prophecies. And this disappointment grows into cynicism, which ultimately grows into half-hearted worship. They don't really value God. And so they start giving God all kinds of blind, crippled, and lame animals, the sacrificial system, the worship that is encapsulated by the sacrificial system is cheap worship. And this is just dishonoring to the Lord. Okay, so that's the context. All right, now. Malachi chapter 3 and 4, we talked about this yesterday, that God really has a claim against the people. They have a dispute, and then he has a response. We're going to see this flip just a little bit because the people are going to just start giving disputes without an initial claim. Okay, so we've got three of them. The same way we had three disputes yesterday, we got three disputes today. And those three disputes are going to make up our nerdy nuggets for the day. Okay. So the first dispute of today, but really it's our fourth dispute total for counting the three from yesterday, would be Malachi chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. The people have an accusation. The people's accusation is, where is the God of justice? They were dismayed by the apparent prosperity of the wicked, while the righteous continued to suffer hardship. They believed God was either absent or approved of evil. Here's God's response. God promised to send a messenger. Now, this is key, okay? A messenger. This language or this word is really, really important because Malachi's name means my messenger. So we're actually going to see this theme all throughout the book of Malachi. And this is a great segue from the Old Testament to the New Testament, okay? So this is the last prophetic book of the Hebrew Bible. And honestly, it tees up everything that's going to happen in the New Testament perfectly. So God promised to send a messenger to prepare the way for the Lord whom you seek and suddenly come to his temple. So a messenger is going to come to the temple. So God responds to the people's complaint, says, a messenger is going to come to the temple to sort all this out. And the irony is that the messenger is not coming back to the temple to congratulate, right? The announcement is both thrilling but also terrifying. The Lord is coming to his house, but not to congratulate his people. He comes as a refiner's fire. He comes to actually burn up that which is impure so that a remnant will be left, a righteous remnant. God's arrival means purification. The priests or the sons of Levi will be cleansed so that their offerings will once again be acceptable. Okay, so the people have a claim. God now gives a response or a rebuttal that he's going to purge the sons of Levi, the priests, to ensure that they could once again offer acceptable sacrifices. God clarifies that it is his unchanging nature that has kept the Israelites from being utterly consumed. His unchanging nature. Okay, so that's the first kind of dispute. Okay, or the fourth, depending on where we're going to start counting. I'll give you the second dispute, okay? It's our second nerdy nugget for the day. It says Malachi chapter 3, verses 8 through 12. This is a dispute over robbery or tithing, okay? The people's accusation. When God calls the people to return to him, they respond, how shall we return? Okay, I love these questions that the people are asking God. How shall we return? They were so spiritually blind that they did not see their own sinful ways. Here's God's response. God explains that they have robbed him by withholding their tithes and offerings. Okay, a tithe simply means 10%. That the people of Israel were supposed to give God 10% of their increase, of their wealth, their income. This would be in the form of animals, but also in the form of produce and in the form of financial currency. Because of this, the entire nation is under a curse because the people are failing to do this. Experiencing drought and poor harvests, he challenges them to test him by bringing the full tithe to the temple. In return, he promises to open the windows of heaven and pour out so many blessings that they would not have room enough to store them or contain them. This action would prove God's faithfulness and cause other nations to recognize Israel as a delightsome land, okay? So the people are kind of like, how shall we return? You know, what does that mean? And he's like, stop robbing me. How about that? And the people are like, well, how are we robbing you? And God's like, you don't tithe. You don't tithe. You don't give. You're not generous. And so one of the things that I actually want to point out, it says this in verse 6. I, the Lord, do not change. And then obviously a couple of verses later when God says, well, you're robbing me. And they are like, how are we robbing you? In tithes and offerings. Okay, that's verse 8. Okay, two verses later. So if we go two verses up, what does God say? I, the Lord, do not change. Now, a lot of people are going to argue, well, tithing and giving and all that, that's Old Testament. And I'm like, okay, that's your burden of proof is on you to make that argument. But guess what? It says this, I, the Lord, do not change. Now, I know we've got a timeless truth coming up, but I, the Lord, do not change kind of sounds like even if the details change, even if, you know, there are some general things that change, guess what's always true? God requires sacrifice. God requires that we're generous because he wants to know the posture of our hearts. We could debate whether or not tithing is Old Testament or New Testament, but I actually think that's a silly debate. That's like me debating whether or not, you know, I'm going to give 10% or 20% to my son. It's like me adding up, oh, his tuition costs this amount and, you know, groceries cost this. So, you know, I've hit my quota. Well, it'd be hard to argue that I really love my son if that was my attitude towards buying clothes for him or buying food. My son is 4 years old, by the way, or paying for a school. Like, really, the healthy heart of a loving father is to not keep count. And I actually want to be someone who loves the Lord so much that I lost count. I'm so generous, I've lost count. If I'm arguing about, like, well, I don't want to give too much, that's already an indicator that my heart is really in the wrong place. If I'm counting, oof, man, if I'm counting up what percentage I'm generous towards my wife, I'm probably not generous towards my wife, right? Like, generosity and like counting kind of don't go together. Generosity means I lavish, right? Generosity means, man, I overspend. When I tally up the budget at the end of every month and then at the end of every year, I want to have given God more than 10%. I want to have been so in love with the Lord and in love with what he's doing and in love with the church that I end up giving more. So I'm not fighting to give less. I'm so full of joy that I end up giving more. That sounds like love to me. And so that's God's second dispute, okay? Here's our third nerdy nugget, for the day, which is the third dispute for the day, which is a dispute over serving God. This starts in Malachi chapter 3, verse 13. And the people have an accusation. The people arrogantly complained that it was futile, that there's no point in serving God. Why? They questioned the benefit that they had received from keeping God's requirements in their mourning and mourning over their sins. Like, why? Why grieve over our sins? Why serve God? Because they're contrasting their perceived lack of reward with the apparent success of the arrogant and the wicked. And I don't know if you've ever done this. I've done this. I've compared the life I'm living for God with people who are, quote unquote, enjoying life, or their life is way easier, way less stipulations, and it seems like they're getting more out of it. And of course, God has a response. This dispute turns into a distinction between two groups of people. For those who fear the Lord and speak of him with respect, God promises to keep a book of remembrance. He assures them they will be his treasured possession, very important terms, treasured possession, and the day of judgment, when a clear distinction will be made between the righteous and the wicked. And that's God's response to this third dispute that the people bring. Okay, so the people just continue to have a lot to say, okay, a lot to complain about. There's one last nerdy nugget that I want to make mention of, and that's the wordplay around the word messenger. It actually runs throughout the entire book. Malachi's very name means my messenger. He speaks of another messenger who will prepare the way and of the messenger of the covenant who will suddenly come to the temple, as if it is as if the whole book builds towards this theme. God moves history forward through his messengers. And what are we going to pick up on in the New Testament? Well, there's a messenger. There's one calling out in the wilderness. His name is John the Baptist. And Malachi sets up this Elijah imagery for us to expect someone who's going to come to be a messenger to prepare the way of the Lord, okay, to be a forerunner for Jesus, the Messiah. The prophecy around Elijah returning before the day of the Lord became central in Jewish expectation. Malachi ends with reconciliation, fathers and children turning back to one another. The New Testament
picks this up directly in John the Baptist's ministry. Okay, John the Baptist becomes someone who's coming in the spirit of Elijah. And so this prophecy around Elijah is really, really, really important. Okay, this is Luke chapter 1, verse 17. It's no accident that the Old Covenant or the Old Testament ends with the word curse. This is chapter 4, verse 6. And the New Testament opens with the voice of one preparing the way, the voice of a messenger, the one of a voice who comes in the spirit of Elijah, and that is none other than John the Baptist. Okay, so a lot of nerdy nuggets. I'll give you one more. When it comes to tithing, God says, test me in chapter 3, verse 10. The command to test the Lord is pretty shocking because normally testing God was forbidden. I want you to go look up Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 16. Okay, the book of Deuteronomy makes it clear, do not test the Lord. Remember, even the people of Israel tested God in the wilderness multiple times, and God was not happy about it. But here, God flips it. Obedience in giving, tithing, and generosity is so tied to trust that God invites the people to try it. Test me, and I'll open up the windows of heaven. The windows of heaven echo Genesis. This echoes flood imagery. Okay, remember the floodgates of the heavens or the windows of the heavens were open and drowned everybody. Now, this is going to be turned to blessing rather than judgment in Malachi chapter 3. Alrighty, I'm going to give you some timeless truths as we land the plane and end our time together. Malachi shows us that God's refining is an act of love. Fire burns and soap scours. So these are two dominant metaphors that God uses for how he's going to refine his people. He's going to burn up that which does not need to be there and clean up that which is foul or dirty. But they cleanse rather than destroy, okay? God disciplines his people not to harm them, but to make them holy. So not for harm, but for holiness. So the two images that we have are for holiness, not for harm. And those are the fire and the soap, okay? And I would say that's timelessly true. That's not just true for Malachi. God is still a refining fire. God is still a scouring soap. That is true, okay? He also insists that worship and justice belong together. This is a massive theme for Malachi, that worship and justice belong together. What good is it if we sing great songs, but we don't treat our neighbor with love? Singing songs means nothing if we cheat workers, ignore widows, or mistreat migrants or immigrants. God listens not just to our prayers, but to how we treat people. That is timelessly true, okay? And we pull that right out of the book of Malachi. The teaching on tithe, on the tithe, reminds us that generosity is an act of faith. Giving is not about manipulating God into blessing us, but all about trusting that he will provide. Open hands reveal open hearts. The closing verses teach us how to live between promise and fulfillment. We look back, remembering what God has said and done. We look forward, waiting for what he has promised. This posture of remembering and watching keeps us steady and consistent. Finally, Malachi reassures us that God notices. He sees everything. He's not blind to suffering, to success, to faithfulness, none of it. He sees everything. In a cynical world where faithfulness seems invisible, God writes a book of remembrance. No act of reverence is forgotten. No life of quiet faith is overlooked. And with that, we come to the end of the prophets, and we come to the end of the book of Malachi. Tomorrow, we've got day 252, and we are going to be in the book of Psalms. We start a brand new section of the Hebrew Bible tomorrow. We've covered the Torah, and now we've covered the Nevi'im. And now it is time to cover the Ketuvim. The Ketuvim's next, and we've got Psalm chapter 1 and 2 tomorrow. I'm really, really excited about it, and I hope that our trek through the prophets really helped you to understand God's heart for his people. And I hope it is reshaped maybe some of your assumptions that you had about the prophets. So tomorrow we dive into the book of Psalms. I'm so excited about it. I'm so proud of you if you're on a streak. Even if you're not on a streak, I'm also proud, okay? So I'm still proud even if you're not on a streak. I love you. I'll see you right here tomorrow for day 252 as we kick it off in Psalms chapter 1 and 2. Love you guys. Peace.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.